turn now to the actual market gardening. And I know that some of your work was used recently in some of the outcomes from this research was used recently in the Migration Museum's current exhibition about losing the plot. Fascinating, and you know, and again, a piece of history for Adelaide that I wasn't aware of. Mm. Can you outline the range of vegetables? They were primarily vegetables that were grown in the market gardens.
Sure. The majority of the market gardeners were growing tomatoes in glasshouses, so as early as, you know, say the early 30s. And Adelaide had the East End Market, which was very robust, but there was also trade with Victoria, because Victoria wasn't growing tomatoes at that time. So a lot of the market gardeners here were growing for the markets in Melbourne. Some people also supplemented, well, I think all of them actually supplemented with outside vegetables. So, you know, that would be things like onions, potatoes, trombone. You know what trombone is?
I assumed it was a gourd of some sort, yeah, of marrow.
Yes. We've had a lot of fun, a couple of the men who I've interviewed talking about trombones, because it's not that well known. So some bunched things, so like onions and things. But it's really interesting. We were talking recently, some of these men and me, because we're preparing for a presentation for History Month.
Yes.
And we were saying that eggplants, capsicum, and one other vegetable that we eat a lot of now.
The zucchini?
Yeah, it could have been. What weren't really known at that time. An interesting thing was one of these families grew sweet potatoes and grew a lot of those. And I was really surprised about that being, you know, an early vegetable. Really interesting feature in terms of the vegetables. If you think of these families being market gardeners, say, let's say from the early 1930s, by the time that the war came, the government was looking for food growers to supply food to the army. So even though it was a very difficult time for a lot of Italians during the war, some were interned, some had to be some were conscripted to government works through an organisation called the Allied Works Council. But some were directed to grow vegetables for the army, and so it was potatoes, carrots, cabbages, you know, real sort of stock standard vegetables.
So I was interested in terms of tomatoes, and my theory about that was then blown away when you said, well, no, eggplants and capsicums and things weren't really known at the time. Is that because do you think the choice of tomatoes because it was such a staple for their food back home, and it was one thing that they knew about themselves, but also would be critical for their own diet, I would have thought, or the continuity of the diet that they were used to, or was that an irrelevance?
Katrina, that's a really interesting question. I think it might have been driven maybe by both, but certainly by the market here. There was also another thing that happened with the tomatoes in the glasshouses. So there was really one season, and what happened to supplement that season and use the glasshouses was to grow beans a little after the sort of production of tomatoes was going, and so it meant that there was a continuity through the glasshouse. But I'm sure that tomatoes would have been known as a crop, although the people who came from the north came from much colder conditions than we have here in Adelaide. But I guess that they would have known that this was what was needed. Because I asked one of the people I interviewed, how come you could have so many people in a small area growing as many tomatoes as possible? But they said that it was always, you know, possible to sell, especially, you know, if they were good grade. The other thing that I have found in this interview, because as we've held public events, other people, apart from the vanity, have come to them. So other Italians and some Anglo-Australians. And through one of these men, Ray Ballantyne, I found that there were a number of soldier settlers from World War One who were allocated land, some of them right on the river, some very close. And they, the Ballantynes and the Wests, grew celery, like huge tracts of land, like the West family had 10 acres and it was basically just celery, very close to the river, very alluvial soil, which enabled that to be possible.
Flooded regularly, I imagine, at that time.
At that time,
And maybe this is getting down to too much detail, but I'm interested in the variety of tomatoes. So was it all one variety, do you know? I mean, this may not be part. Was it they weren't all Roma, or they were a variety? Or
no, there was a standard basic tomato, which was useful because it could be packed easily. It was sort of flattish.
Ah, yes, yes.
And people basically used their seed. So the best tomatoes were kept to provide the seed for the next year, and they'd all go into a small glass house where, you know, the seeds were being raised before they were being transplanted. But it was mainly one variety. Yeah. And of course, not hybrid. So pesticides in the early days weren't used. And in order to alleviate the problems of pests and disease, the families had to move every glass house about every 2 years, and that was a mammoth task.
Yes, so they would have to dismantle pane by pane.
That's right.
Yeah, well, and I suppose that's the precursor of this rotational cropping that we are supposed to do in our own home gardens.
Yeah.
If we're successful gardeners.
Yeah, and then when pesticides came in, it meant that people could use the pesticides and keep the glass houses in situ, you know.
And I imagine that, well, it'd be interesting to know whether those particular tomato variety is now considered to be an heirloom variety and how they have changed.
Yeah, I don't know, because the people who I have most to do with now from this project who have become friends would be trying out all sorts of different tomatoes and would have tomatoes that they grow specifically for their tomato sauce and try other ones. And they're mainly hybrid, because then they, you know, don't have the same problems with disease and things like that.
Well, that's right, and the seasonality is not quite so strong, I think, when you've got hybrid. I mean, you can grow various things at different times of the year. So you mentioned the children and their role, and can you talk a little bit more about how important they were to the gardens?
Well, I think they were really important. Some families were lucky enough to have larger families, which meant, you know, if you had five children, they could all be involved. Some families with two children, on the other hand, were less advantaged. But the people who I first interviewed in 2007-08 told me really interesting stories, which made me think more that it was important to ask about children's roles and their tasks. So most of these families at that time had at least one cow. So some of the kids would have been milking the cow, and certainly, you know, tethering and doing that sort of thing. There was a horse in all these families, and some of the men were using the plough with the horse when they were perhaps not even halfway up the horse, you know, in height. They were hoeing around the glass houses and inside to make sure that weeds were kept to a minimum. The early glass houses only had two panes on the side, so that they were basically about just over 4 foot in height. So the children were put to work on the outsides of the glass houses, inside, to you know, do the work. And some of them were doing little bits of pruning and things like that, or tying up the tomatoes as they grew with the strings. So there were a lot of tasks that children were doing. And some people, when I've interviewed them, said there was never any homework done at home. You know, you come home from school and what you had to do was get straight to your task.
I mean, I think that was probably very much a sign of the times. And I think of parallels in the dairy industry with children going home to help milk and getting up early in the morning. So again, and distribute hay, etc., etc. So yes, I think children were very heavily involved in general with the tasks associated with their parents' work. Did they, any of your gardeners, get into the processing? You talked about growing tomatoes for their tomato sauce. Did any of them at that stage get into the processing of well, I suppose they sold all of their tomatoes, but there wasn't an interest then in making tomato sauce and bottling it for sale?
No, I think that life was just too busy to get into that side of things. You know, when people, I asked them, you know, what was the length of the day, you know, say of their parents, and if it was market day, they were up at 2:30 or 3 in the morning, and then coming home and having to, you know, join their wives or children to, you know, do that work. I think that there was very much a domestic way of processing food. So people with cows had cream and butter and ricotta. Some people had enough vines to make a small amount of wine. Some of them told me that they really early on, the parents would have got grapes from McLaren Vale, some of them from the Barossa. They picked up manure from chicken farms out at Gawler, around that sort of way. So many of them had orchards, you know, on a small scale, chickens. So, you know, they were able to probably consume just about all food from their own gardens. Maybe meat was bought elsewhere, but
really fascinating. And not olives at that stage.
Some had to olives. I was talking recently to an Italian man who was from a family from Napoli area, and his father had been a market gardener leasing land near the river off Flinders, off Findon Road, and they moved to Flinders Park, north of Grange Road, and bought a large block, I don't know, maybe two house sizes, house block sizes, and planted a lot of olives, so much so that they were able to press and have their own olive oil, but someone else had a press, and I know that some people did that.
And possibly that's also, again, a function of coming from southern Italy rather than from northern Italy, where olives would be much more successfully grown, I would imagine, in the southern areas. Well, thank you, Madeline. I think there's so much more to talk about, but we're running out of time.